Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim and Chris. On today's Australian Open quarterfinals catch-up, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com.
Magdalenette's dream run continues.
Novak Djokovic strolls into the semi-finals.
And Elena Rybakina sets up a showdown with Victoria Azarenka.
Kim, Chris, today is the 25th of January and we are here to catch up on the Australian Open quarterfinals at Tennis Weekly HQ. We now have our semi-finalists set. Magdalenette, of all people, is there. We've also got Novak Djokovic, who has destroyed another player in the draw, this time Andrei Rublev. Whenever will he get to a Grand Slam semi-final? And we've got a very tasty showdown between Victoria Azarenka and Elena Rybakina. That is the oldest Grand Slam champion left in the ladies' draw and the youngest Grand Slam champion left in the ladies' draw. So a very tantalizing matchup there. And guys, we are recording 15 minutes earlier today because Chris, you have explicitly messaged us on the group because you've got a cinema date this evening.
I do indeed, and I do apologise for the 15 minutes early that you did get here, and then I still was not on time.
I don't know about you, Kim, but I'm not happy about that. I can only assume you're going to watch some arty Danish film with English subtitles.
I'm hoping I don't understand anything about it, and that's how you can tell it's a good film in Denmark, I think. So I will happily provide a review next time, and then maybe that will make up for the 15 minutes that you had to start a bit early on this one.
I just hope it's going to be a Scandi crime drama, bit of Scandi noir, because that's still, I think, is that still popular, those sorts of things? I'd like to think
not
they are.
Not popular in Denmark, I found out, but very popular outside of Denmark, particularly in the home counties. Very popular subtitle drama.
And on BBC4 rather than on the big screen.
BBC4, yes, of course. Indeed.
Well, we're not here to talk about BBC4, are we, guys? Unfortunately, unless tennis goes on to BBC4 at some point. But at the moment, it's kind of on Netflix and Discovery and whatnot. But let's talk about the quarterfinals, because we are here to catch up before Chris goes to the cinema to talk about all the quarterfinal action from Melbourne. Let's start with the men, shall we? I feel like we should maybe just get one particular match out the way, because, I mean, it was kind of done and dusted before it
the
ever
writing
really
was on the wall
started.
Before they went out, wasn't it?
If this was a film, the plot would be kind of rubbish, I think. And the match we're talking about is Novak Djokovic against Andrei Rublev, which was just a bit of a one-sided affair, to say the least. Joel, do you want to kick us off and give us your synopsis of the Djokovic-Rublev encounter?
Yeah, I mean, Djokovic really just picked up, I feel, where he left off against Alex de Minaur. Andrei Rublev, I don't think he really did much wrong, to be honest. But Djokovic was just on another level, and there were no real signs of injury. Yes, his leg was taped up, but it didn't really inhibit his movement. And he got the job done very, very, very convincingly. 6-1. 6-2, 6-4, Rublev really kind of felt a bit sorry for him, a bit powerless, I think, to really kind of do anything. You could see him kind of getting increasingly frustrated as the match went on. And even though he had a few breakpoint opportunities, Djokovic really, I feel, is just coming into his own, at the business end of the tournament.
Yeah, he's really gone from strength to strength, since the early rounds where we had question marks over his leg. This was just an absolute kind of obliteration. I don't think it was helped by the fact that his opponent, as competent and consistent and highly ranked as Rublev is, has never won a Grand Slam quarterfinals. And we were saying before that none of us thought he really had the weapons to sort of really challenge Djokovic. So I think the matchup was just sort of kind of terrible on all fronts for giving us a close encounter. And I was hoping Rublev could do a bit more, but everything he did was just nullified by Djokovic and his defense. And, you know, with Rublev not having the kind of killer weapons, it was really just, I guess, only one outcome. There was arguably more drama with fans and whatnot, wasn't there, Chris? There was some hecklers going on, some flag encounters, which didn't go down too well. What did you make of all the sort of off-court stuff that was going on, Chris, in this match?
Well, I think if there was any good intention to it, it was just because Rublev needed a distraction, or Novak Djokovic to be distracted during any of the points, because, as you say, like, it was a bit of a mass destruction in this sense. But it's, you always get kind of at Grand Slams, you get these sorts of situations, and it's always tricky for kind of the officials to know what to do. But it's not something you ever want to see. And you kind of want to keep the conversation focused on the tennis, because I think we can all agree that with the banning of Russian players at Wimbledon, it hasn't necessarily had the positive effect that Wimbledon was hoping for. So try and keep politics out of tennis would be my preference there.
I mean, do you think, you know, I think it was interesting to hear from Victoria Azarenka, which we'll get on into the second half, her talking about like this need for heroes and villains in, you know, in kind of tennis and in kind of just general sport narrative in the news. And as a result of that feeling that, you know, Novak Djokovic is this villain. And that's why we're seeing some hecklers, you know, in the crowd. We've seen, you know, on more than one occasion, Djokovic talk to the umpire, telling them to kind of hear what they're saying and, you know, get security on them, get them out of here. Do you feel like Djokovic is being unfairly kind of painted as a villain, and, you know, we shouldn't really be kind of looking at it from that kind of standpoint? I think in Azarenka's words, she was like, a lot of people see us as kind of like superheroes. No, we're kind of humans and we just want to go about our kind of day job. Do you feel like it's unfair to see kind of Djokovic get these hecklers, you know, when he steps out onto the tennis court?
I think it is unfair. I mean, if I'm doing my job, I don't want to have people like having a go at me. Like, I want everyone to treat me with respect, regardless of what I may or may not have done or what's going on in the world. So I don't think it's really appropriate, whatever the setting. But Chris, maybe you, maybe you've got a different angle. I don't know.
Well, I think it's part of, obviously, what comes with celebrity is that you are unfortunately opened up to criticism. And I think that the villain sort of aspect of things, I don't think Nadal is necessarily painted out as a villain in those ways, or Federer necessarily, unless you kind of have something against like good sportsmanship and kind of staying out of controversy. I think of some of the big names, there is slightly more there's slightly more debate around Djokovic in terms of his intentions at certain times. I do think that when it comes to the point about the superheroes, it's actually quite ironic, because the WTA actually did do a whole superhero themed year of on the tour, where they all got sort of dressed up with capes, and the idea was that they were these super women. So I think it is something where tennis has played into it before. I think there was a US Open where they kind of gave everyone personal branding that obviously takes the human element out of it. But I mean, at the end of the day, like, if someone is distracting you or people are criticizing you whilst you're playing, that will affect your game, and that's what you're there to do. So that shouldn't be allowed. And if someone is doing that, they should be removed. But I do think that the nature of having favourites and all of that, it's a bit naive as a ranker to think that you wouldn't have people that you really like and really don't like. But to take it personally would be sort of where I'd say the issue would be, and if you're reading into it too much as a player. But that's my take.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at the other quarterfinal from the men's side today, because we had two Americans taking part, both at this stage of Grand Slam for the first time. So going to have a new semi-finalist regardless. Tommy Paul, slightly more experienced than the very young Ben Shelton, And I guess this maybe came out the way we kind of expected. I wasn't too surprised by the scoreline or the result myself. Tommy Paul winning in four sets, 7-6, 6-3, 5-7, 6-4. So Shelton managing to grab that third set there, to force a fourth. Oh, that's a bit of a tongue twist, isn't it? Force a fourth. But yeah, I mean, Tommy Paul through to his first semi-final. Ben Shelton's kind of dream run is over on his debut down under. Chris, what did you make of this encounter? And do you think, after what you've seen of Tommy Paul in this match and prior, that he has got anything to challenge Novak Djokovic, given Djokovic's form going into the semi?
I would try and be sort of an optimist on this, but
trying really hard.
It's really hot, Kim.
I'm trying really hard.
You found it really hard to say that with a straight face.
Well, yeah, maybe the listeners could hear that too. I don't want to be, you know, like down in the dumps about Tommy Paul. I you know, it's not over yet. I think, you know, the fat lady hasn't sung. He's still in it. So say
yeah,
no more.
I mean, that's quite positive. I'm going to go one more positive than Kim here and say that maybe he'll be inspired by the fact that he has no expectation and he hasn't actually played a very high-ranking opponent, that he will somehow just level up and produce something truly magical. But I think when we start looking at this, the format of five sets, and it just seems so unlikely that someone who was pushed quite far by sort of Ben Shelton is going to be able to do some damage to Novak Djokovic. There was one theory, though, that I was going to raise for Djokovic, was that the more injured he is, the more aggressive he is. And he's playing very aggressive tennis, maybe to try and keep it, the points as short as possible and the match as short as possible. So to borrow the Sharapova phrase of extremely injured, do we think that the injury has fully gone away? Or do you think that he's been forced to play in a way that minimizes the effect the injury has? Because that's the hope for Tommy Paul, is that the bandage is back on. He's strapped up and to make those points as long as possible. That's the only thing you can hope for.
Joel, I mean, do you want to add anything further, or are we kind of all in agreement to the fact that Tommy Paul's got to hope for a bit of a miracle?
Before we get on to talking about Tommy Paul, Novak Djokovic, I think it's just, you know, we've got to appreciate or recognize how well Tommy Paul has done to get to the semifinals, because I feel like he's quite an unfancied of the Americans. I know there's been a lot of hype in terms of all of the Americans in the top 50 at the moment. And I certainly think, you know, there's a big spotlight kind of put on players like Taylor Fritz and Francis Tiafoe, who are already kind of well set and ready made for the tour. And then you've got underneath that players like Jensen Brooksby and Ben Shelton, who are sort of making their way and finding their feet. And then I feel like then you've got people like Tommy Paul, who have been on the tour and have been very, very kind of consistent, I feel. And I think this is kind of just rewards, really, as, you know, Grand Slam semi-finalist at the Australian Open. I know it's probably going to be a surprise to a lot of people, but, you know, I think about Kyle Edmund, Aslan Karatsev as well, who have been surprise semi-finalists at the Australian Open. So, you know, it has happened before. And, you know, his interview afterwards, I think he's such a humble guy. And I think he, you know, he talked about his mum, I think, had come over from United States after the fourth round to watch his performance. So, you know, very, very nice, I think, to see. And yeah, although I think he's been overlooked arguably at times, I think, you know, back to the Laver Cup, actually, you know, would it have been wise to have the Tommy Paul in the team? I think it's nice that he's kind of getting the recognition at the moment.
Do you think that Tommy Paul believes he can win, though, Joel? That's my thing. You said humble. We talked about kind of player attitudes before, kind of with Casper. But do you think he's more of a... It kind of gives me a competition sort of winner, you know? He's got lucky with the draw. He's got to the semi-finals and he's kind of just happy to have got there and to step on court. And he does seem like a nice chap, but
yeah,
I don't think that he has that, right, my competition is still going. I've got my eye on the trophy, you know? I don't think he has that. And I just think that's a bit frustrating when just happy to be here. And I think, well, it's not over. There's much more to come.
Yeah. I know what you mean. It's sort of kind of like the cool Californian, like Mardy Fish, like I'm just here and I'm just going to go with it kind of mentality.
I believe it. Like, I can believe it. You've won the matches. Each match you've won, you know?
I guess it's hard to put that out of your mind given, yeah, he wouldn't have been expecting, I feel, to make a Grand Slam semi-final, you know, at the start of, you know, at the start of the tournament. But I guess that's what he, I think that's what he is going to have to do. As much as that might be, I feel like his instinct, he's going to try and have to, I think, put that aside and be like, look, everyone here is thinking I'm probably making up the numbers when I'm playing Novak Djokovic in a Grand Slam semi-final. I think I read after Novak Djokovic's win that he hasn't lost in Melbourne once reaching the semi-finals. So it is a very, very tall order. And arguably, you know, he's going to hope that the Djokovic body breaks down in that matchup, because I think that is probably the only way he has got a realistic chance of winning that match, is if the Djokovic body breaks down on him, there are more concerns and kind of growing pains, and that maybe is his opportunity. But I feel like, make no mistake, he's going to have to play absolutely out of his skin.
And just a note on Ben Shelton before we look at the other men's quarters, where do you think he's gonna, what do you think the rest of his year shapes up like after reaching the quarters here? Where do you think his ranking's gonna be, say, this time next year, based on what we've seen throughout this tournament with him coming through the draw, Joel?
Yeah, I could see him, you know, maybe in the next gen finals at the end of the season. I think, you know, there's a lot of hype and there's a lot of talk about him being a future top 10 player, maybe even a top 5 player. I think, you know, he will do very well, I think, to kind of put that noise aside and just kind of get back to the tour and kind of focus on his game. I think, you know, with the Sunshine Double coming up in Indian Wells and Miami, he's going to feel right at home there. And I think that's also going to be really great in terms of capitalizing on this Grand Slam breakout, the fact that he's got these big home profile tournaments coming up. He can kind of, I think, establish his image a bit more. But I kind of see, who knows, potentially a next gen finals champion at the end of the season, I think is what I would say his ambition should be. I think there's opportunities, of course, to, you know, win a first ATP singles title as well. But yeah, I really think that the sky's the limit at the moment for him.
Couldn't have put it better myself. I mean, just a note on American tennis, because obviously we had three Americans in the quarterfinals here, which was the first time at the AO since 2000. And Tommy Paul making it through to the semis, he's the first guy to do that since 2009 in Australia. And he's only the third American currently playing on tour to have got to the semis of a slam, and the other two being TFO, obviously quite recently, and also John Isner. So he, you know, regardless of the outcome against Novak, he should be very, very proud of getting to this stage, because it, you know, has been quite few and far between for the Americans since the likes of Andy Roddick.
Did you know, though, Kim, and Chris as well, I didn't realise this about Tommy Paul, that he played a match at the US Open back in 2017 with Steve Johnson in the doubles. He played it drunk, or at least very, very hungover. I don't know if any of our listeners are aware of this, but to be honest, to me, it makes him even more likable, actually. But he lost a match 6-love, 35 minutes against Bolelli and Fognini. Yeah, I think he played a singles match the day before, lost, really hated his performance, went on a bit of a bender, and not great, but it sort of makes him more endearing to me, actually.
Blimey. Let's hope he doesn't do that before the semi-final. Or maybe that might be the secret strategy. Who knows?
Yeah, get some Dutch courage.
Yeah. Play out his skin, literally, yeah. I mean, so we also had, obviously, two of the men's quarterfinals yesterday, which were both quite straightforward matches. It's generally been quite an underwhelming set of quarterfinals, you know, I think it's fair to say. Let's start with Stefanos Tsitsipas against Jiří Lehečka. This was straight sets to Tsitsipas. Tsitsipas is back into the semi-finals here yet again. He's very, very consistent in Melbourne in recent years. And he's doing the magic down under again. He's also not lost a singles match yet this season. He's 9-0, which is, very encouraging for him to go even further. Chris, what did you make of Tsitsipas in this one? It was straight set, 6-3, 7-6, 6-4. Perhaps a bit closer than the main big scoreline suggested. But what do you make of Tsitsipas kind of going into the final four? And you know, what did you make of Jiří Lehečka as well? Obviously, first time at this stage for him as well.
Lehečka, I thought, played really well. But I think the positive side of this was that Tsitsipas played as well as I've seen him play. I mean, he played the big points particularly well, and he saved all 8 break points he faced. And that's not always been the case with him. I think he's sometimes been a bit up and down. He sometimes kind of got a break and then been broken back. And it shows that something's kind of shifted, I think, in his mentality. And I think I said that at the start of the year, that he feels different in some of these close contests. And last year, I think he felt a little bit, I don't know how he felt, but my perception was that he was a little bit lost in terms of his direction, where he fitted in terms of some of the younger players were coming up. And obviously he was the big young hope. But for this match, I think what could have been a situation where Lehečka was playing completely kind of without any form of pressure on himself. Like the Greek in this match, I thought he played fantastically. And some of the rallies and some of the shots he hit in his backhand were rock solid, and even on the big points. So I think we all thought he might be edging his way towards a final, but it's a lot easier for us to predict that than for him to actually do that. And if I have to, I don't know, this, I'm going to have to say this, but I'm kind of rooting for him, because I think I would like to see someone like Tsitsipas get a Grand Slam start of the year, and then we can see if Djokovic, obviously he might come through in lots of different slams as well, but I just think we need a bit of a mid-gener. Is that a technical
term?
Now-gener. Maybe not, but yes, we need someone who's been wasn't on Netflix but could have been to get one.
The only thing I would be worried about with Tsitsipas, and I think you just mentioned it, was the fact that he was 8-for-8 on break points. And to me, it was a little bit. There were times that I was thinking, was Lehečka getting? Was he finding too much value on the Tsitsipas serve? And I can imagine, for example, if it's Tsitsipas Djokovic, in a Grand Slam final, if he's given Novak Djokovic 8 breakpoint chances on his service games, you know, it's going to be a lot harder, I feel, for him to, you know, save 100% of those, which was, you know, fantastic against Lehečka. But for me, I'm just a little bit worried maybe about how vulnerable his service games are.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think for me, the positive I took from it was the fact that he didn't kind of get broken. But we've seen in the matches they played previously that Djokovic, I mean, he's obviously got the better head-to-head, and it would be a very different situation. We've got the French Open final. Obviously, he wants something to be a point to be proven, maybe. It could be a positive way of thinking about that. So I think the big question is, if he gets the final, if he's able to bring a level that obviously doesn't give Djokovic opportunities, because we know that he is one of the best at taking them.
And also, actually, just on that, because although it was straight sets, and although on paper it looked very easy, there were moments where Tsitsipas did get hot under the collar, and there is a video of him hitting a ball at the, you know, the back of the court onto the wall as a ball boy was kind of running forward to kind of, collect the ball after a point had been played. And I think it was Jim Courier who said on commentary that Tsitsipas was not very far away from hitting that ball boy in a similar sort of fashion that, you know, Novak Djokovic did, at the US Open to a line judge. So for me, though, I guess there is still that question around his temperament, that even though it was a straight sets victory and looked relatively easy on paper, you still have these moments to potentially self-combust. And again, that could play into someone else's, his opponent's hands, maybe in a semi-final or a final.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it before, and we've seen, there's that video where he kind of swung his racket and he actually struck his father on court when on-court coaching was allowed. And I think, Joel, that's a really good point, because how you respond to being broken in those moments is also as important as whether you're able to save them. And if he had been broken, we don't know how he would have responded. So I think that would be interesting to see kind of in a semi-final, if it doesn't all go his way and he isn't 8 from 8, what that looks like for him.
And let's look at that semi-final, because he will be playing Karen Khachanov, who came through against Seb Korda. Korda retiring in the third set after being 3-love down with a right wrist injury. Such a shame for Sebastian Korda, because he was obviously looking really good throughout this tournament, had a great start to the season. And I mean, I had predicted him for the semi-final. So it was a bit of a shame just generally that he wasn't able to continue in the match. Obviously, he was out a long time last year with injury. And to sort of get to this point and have to succumb to injury is just, yeah, really, really not great. He did say he had it a little bit in Adelaide a couple of weeks ago, and then it went away. But it bothered him from the second set onwards. Joel, I mean, obviously, this was 7-6, 6-3, 3-love in the end. Korda retiring. What did you make of the match up to the point of kind of Korda feeling this, yeah, this wrist kind of coming to the fore again?
Yeah, I mean, it's been very impressive couple of weeks from Karen Khachanov. Now back-to-back semi-finals at Grand Slam following US Open at the end of last season. And I thought, particularly in this match, he played very well. I think he used the angles across the court to his advantage, particularly on the serve and on his forehand from the baseline. I also thought he was helped a little bit by Korda's backhand breaking down more often than we've seen. And, you know, that I think is to be expected when you've got little wrist injury niggle, which I think was a, you know, was a shame. But yeah, really, really good from Khachanov. And something that caught me out a little bit with Daniil Medvedev now falling outside of the top 10 and Karen Khachanov on the rise. We could be looking at like a new Russian male number one that isn't Daniil Medvedev, which is sort of surprising to me, because I still feel that Daniil Medvedev's level of tennis is a lot higher than Karen Khachanov's. But maybe I'm not giving Khachanov enough of credit here. And actually, that gap, I think, is significantly smaller than I think me and maybe arguably some of our listeners may be giving it credit for.
He's one win away in the live rankings from returning to be the Russian number one. So that is a bit of a surprise, I think, because they've had very different paths, you know, in terms of the person we thought when they burst on the scene would probably be a Grand Slam champion would probably have been Khachanov at the time. And then Medvedev has kind of plugged away to get himself into great opportunities before he was able to take one. So that is quite surprising.
Is it harsh to think, even if Khachanov goes above Medvedev, if I had like a Davis Cup tie the next day, I'd still want to put Medvedev as my number one, if I'm being really honest.
If Khachanov wins the Australian Open, would you still think that?
Oh.
Is he really going to win, though, with Novak Djokovic in the draw?
No.
I mean, okay, let's...
Well, maybe. Anyone could do anything. Anyone can win. Anyone can lose.
I mean, Medvedev is...
Djokovic.
I suppose if Khachanov won, he'd also be a Grand Slam champion. This all becomes very hypothetical. But yeah, I'd still put Medvedev...
Same.
Above. I think, you know, he's more reached the last stage.
More finals.
Yes. More often. But just fell early here. But I mean, I expect, for me, I think Tsitsipas will probably get the edge. You know, he's more experienced. He's been to a Grand Slam final before. Loves these courts. And yeah, I'm going to go for Tsitsipas. We'll look at predictions later on today. We'll do if you've got more time to think before we get on to who we're actually picking and plunging for. But yeah, such a shame for Korda. He had a great tournament. But, you know, Karen Khachanov, one of those players that sort of is there or thereabouts, I always think, and is very capable of
pulling off. He always asks the question, doesn't he?
Yeah, big upset on his day. He's one of those players you don't really want to face, I think. He's a bit of a danger man at times. And here he is into the semi-finals. So, you know, good for him. Absolutely. On that note, let's have a very quick break now, but we'll be back shortly to discuss the ladies' quarterfinals action from day 9 and 10. So do not go anywhere.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to Tennis Weekly, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com. And now we're going to look back at the ladies' quarterfinals from the last 2 days. Joel, I know you're really excited. We're going to kick off with your favourite, or your new favourite.
Stayed up late for this last night.
With Magda, what do you like to call her? Goat net?
The goat net train is still moving, Kim. It's in the semi-finals.
Is that your new Twitter handle, Joel?
Well, I should have got it. I'm going to assume some bright spots probably already gone for it. But the Pliskova bot is definitely a passenger now on the Goatnet steam train.
Well, yeah, the train's been picking up quite a lot of people, I have to say, stopping at lots of players. Yeah. So Magda Linette, through to the her first Grand Slam semi-final. She beat Pliskova 6-3, 7-5. She continues to upset the seeds that she seems to come across. Took just under an hour and a half to remove Pliskova from the draw in straight sets. And, obviously, Joel, you're extremely happy. Chris, you know, you're our sort of resident WTA expert. Before the Australian Open, you know, what did you know about Magda Linette? Was she really on your radar? What was your impression? Would you have ever considered that she had the game to make it to a semi-final here?
Well, I would describe her game. She's super handy. She's very competent. And she does have a game where you can see her causing upsets, but they tend to have been isolated incidents, such as at last year's French Open. I mean, I did think she would actually take out Ons in that one. And she's had these sort of scalps throughout her career, but she's never necessarily backed them up. And I think that's one of the trickiest parts of kind of life on tour, is that there are a lot of players, and we've seen this with Grand Slam champions in the last couple of years, a lot of players who on their day can beat anyone, and players who haven't necessarily had experience at this level before. So it almost feels like it was, it was a surprise, but there's always been that potential there. And I think the impact that Iga has had on Polish tennis, I think when we were in the press conferences in Glasgow, and the number of times Linette was asked the question about Iga not being there, and Linette said, I've played number one for my country for a really long period of time, and I've done it before, I'll do it again. And it was almost like she had a point to prove. And I think now, after the United Cup and playing together, it feels like less of a point to prove, but more the fact that they're kind of all doing it together, like her catch, herself and Iga. And it feels like it's a great time for Polish tennis, and the success of Iga has actually really spurred her on and lifted her kind of in a slightly later part of her career. So not unbelievably surprised given some of the results. But if someone said, would I predict her for a semi-final, I would have to very clearly say, no, I did not see this coming.
Yeah.
I do think in this match against Pliskova, when she plays these really big hitters, she is very, very good at using that pace and redirecting the ball. And I think with Pliskova, we know her movement is not the greatest. And I think Linette really exploited that in this matchup. And yes, I think she was helped by the number of unforced errors that Pliskova made. Her serve wasn't as good as I think it needed to be. But the way I think Linette has that added variety, where she can really kind of soak up those big ball strikers and move them across the court, and that I think has been complemented by her serve actually throughout the tournament, which has done well, considering her, you know, considering her size, because she's not the most imposing type of tennis player on the tennis court. But yeah, for me, those were kind of a couple of the factors that I think, yes, it might have felt like a surprise, but actually she put a really, really good strategy together. And, you know, we've seen before, I think this match and this run that she's been on, when she's been taking out seed after seed after seed, it really has reminded me, I think, of Leila Annie Fernandez's run back in the, you know, the US Open, when, you know, she got to the final, you know, against Emma Raducanu. It sort of reminds me of that kind of, yeah, I'm going in as the underdog, but I'm going to prove everyone wrong. And she is just bringing up and building up belief, you know, with round after round.
But she is the ultimate underdog still, because everyone else left in the draw is higher ranked and seeded. So Lynette, you know, if that works for her, then maybe it will continue to work. Yeah, she said, though, that she tried not to panic, just went for it when she had the chance to do so. And I think, you know, that obviously paid off, and she's in the form of her life. So really, really good stuff. And who would have thought that it would be her the Polish player in the semifinals, all expecting it to be Iga Świątek. But the Polish fans will be happy nonetheless, I'm sure, because of Lynette and her run. And she will go on to face Arina Sabalenka, who came through against Donna Vekic.
Another big ball striker.
Yeah, another big ball striker. This match was another straight sets victory, 6-3, 6-2. So Sabalenka into now her fourth Grand Slam semi-final. So a lot more experienced than Magda Linette at this stage. She is also, like Tsitsipas, unbeaten this year. She's now on 9-0 for the season. So she's also yet to drop a set at this tournament. Or even in this year, I don't think she's lost a set at all in 2023. Looking at those stats, Chris, do you think Sabalenka is the one to beat? She's had an almost perfect start to the season. Is Magda Linette, you know, going to upset that record, given what we saw of Sabalenka against Donna Vekic?
I mean, I will never bet against GoatNet on this podcast, because I would like
to
continue doing it.
Yeah, you've got me to answer for.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I think the game that Sabalenka is bringing to the court is just so big that it's almost like whatever's on the other side of the net, it's not on their racket, it's on hers. Even if she
it's a Pliskova
kind of does...
upgrade, isn't it?
Oh, it's so. I mean, yeah. I mean, she can do everything, and if she does it well, it's almost a bit like when Serena or someone would say, "If I'm playing my best tennis, I can beat anyone." And I feel like that's very much the Sabalenka story right now. I would love to be able to bring a stat to you that if she does go all the way and win this, that she probably would have spent less time on the court than Andy Murray, because I did see that Djokovic has now, despite playing two more matches, he has been on court for exactly 2 hours less than Murray was. So at this rate, Sabalenka, she must have loads of time left in terms of kind of coming in under 12 hours and 16 to win the title. So that's the stat I would like to bring you. And I'd say probably I'm predicting that she probably will do that.
I love all the stats you bring us, Chris, I have to say. I'm just going to commend you on that one. Yeah, Sabalenka, she was... I mean, you've got to think, she's not won a Grand Slam semi-final, but with this form that she's in...
If not now, when?
Yeah, if she doesn't, then you just think, what else can she do? You know, she's never lost to Linette in her career. She thrashed her, yeah, at the Olympics when they played last. But, you know, Linette has taken out four seeds on her way through to the semis. So, oh, you know, it's going to be an interesting one, I think. But, I mean, I'd have to go with Sabalenka, just given the stats, if you like. Not that stats, you know, stats don't necessarily tell the full picture, do they? But yeah, nice for Vekic to get to this stage, but just didn't have enough on the day against Sabalenka. Her serve was not working for her, and she felt the pressure coming down from Sabalenka. But on the other side, we have another Belarusian through. So Belarus doing very nicely in terms of tennis players. Not that they're representing their country here. They are still competing as neutral athletes. Victoria Azarenka through to the semis. Obviously, she's a two-time champion here. So she'll be very pleased to be back after 10 years since her last time in the semifinals, which also seems crazy. I think that would have been when she last won it, 2013. So perhaps this bodes well. Perhaps she's another... I don't know if she's been in the semis when she hasn't won it. If she's sort of like Djokovic, if she gets to the stage, she goes on to win. I'm not sure. Perhaps that's one for Stats Chris to bring us later on. But Chris, what did you make of Victoria Azarenka? She was straight sets over Jessie Pegula, who was mine and Joel's pick for the tournament. It was quite a comfortable win in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I was very pleased that you guys didn't get that from a collector set perspective. That was very important.
I'm sure
to me.
You were, yeah.
But I mean, the amount of face I've lost for the fact that I thought it would be a straight set, sort of very simple Pegula win, I kind of was bigging her up as it seems like she's kind of established herself at this level. She seems to be taking it all in her stride. And then she went into meltdown on the unforced errors count. So that in itself, I think, is something
that
really
happened?
Did. I think they have a very close friendship. And so I think that there's someone who knows your game that well. And Azarenka is such a good problem solver and so great at asking the difficult questions and making it hard for someone to beat her and making them really beat her rather than her beat herself. I think it's just a case where the margins are very small. Azarenka is moving phenomenally well for a 33-year-old, almost the best I've seen her move. And a player like Pegula, if you keep on getting balls back and she's a bit off or you keep on giving her a ball she's not enjoying, that can kind of lead itself to a bit of a meltdown. And on the stats front, Kim, in Australia, I can confirm that once Victoria Azarenka has made the semifinals, she has not lost the tournament.
Thank you,
but
Chris.
If it was the quarterfinal, that would be a
raised.
Different story. It would be a different story. She's lost three quarterfinals and then taken home the title twice. So is this a foregone conclusion?
Ooh.
I mean, yeah, Azarenka, no doubt, had put in a great performance, maybe even definitely rolled back the years. Rolled back the decade probably is more apt. But yeah, what do you make of Jessie Pegula now that she is 0-5 in Grand Slam quarterfinals? It's, dare I say, Andrei Rublev-esque consistency to get to Grand Slam quarterfinals, but hasn't really been able to make that breakthrough. Even as the third seed here coming in, you know, with confidence, playing really, really well, just not able to get it done. And I think, is it fair to say that Azarenka's, although maybe she'd not have displayed the level Pegula has been at more consistently, is it fair to say Azarenka's ultimate level is higher, and that's what got her over the line so convincingly, and, you know, has shown Pegula really, actually, there's more work to be done here if you really want to be taken seriously as a Grand Slam contender?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think on their day, best, you know, playing their best tennis, Azarenka wins. And when she executes her sort of, you know, aggressive kind of game plan, it's often in the execution. We've seen days where Azarenka goes off the boil, but it was actually Pegula who was the one that was that sort of out of sorts in this match. And yeah, I think, obviously me and you predicted her for the title. And if we are sort of considering her to be similar to something like an Andrei Rublev, then I would never have predicted Rublev for the title. So it almost seems a bit funny, a bit silly really, but, I don't know what it is she needs to do to kind of get to that next bit, because she is kind of falling into this trap of, yeah, she's very consistent getting to quarters, but ultimately falling short when she comes up against someone who, you know, is just going after the ball, executing it and kind of going from strength to strength. So I don't know if her game is big enough. I think she's going to have to do a lot of work.
I mean, it's interesting you say that, because you look at who is left in the draw: Azarenka, Sabalenka, and who we're going to get on into a set, Rybakina. There are some of the biggest hitters in the game, and you do wonder, if you look at Jessie Pegula, is her game as big as those sorts of players? No. Does it need to be in order to maybe become part of that Grand Slam question and that be more of a credible debate, you probably say yes.
She plays smart, competent tennis. And I think against a lot of players before the fourth round, it works. She's great at the net. She's great at approaching. She's got a good serve. And when she's timing the ball well, she's a very, very good ball striker. So she's definitely got the game to cause problems for people. But you can't really ignore the fact that, I mean, she's had four quarterfinals out of the last five Grand Slams? And then at Wimbledon, she didn't play a grass court lead-in tournament, still made the third round. So
it's an all-court game, but doesn't really pierce.
It is, yes, exactly. If she was in a Virtua tennis game or a topspin game, it would say all-court.
She'd be like the Mario in Mario Kart.
Yes, exactly that, yeah. She's the base player.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Azarenka now through to the semi. She's got Rybakina, the reigning Wimbledon champion, who came through against Ostapenko. Again, straight set 6-2, 6-4. So, you know, backing up that win over Iga Świątek. We know that Rybakina can bring it, you know, to a tennis court when it matters the most. You don't win Wimbledon if you're not capable of doing that. And this was, again, quite a quick quarterfinal. You know, none of the quarterfinals have really set the world alight, I have to say. They've all been quite straightforward in their own way. And Rybakina kind of just took control of this match from the off, really. And you know, it's quite routine, really, as it went on. But Chris, what did you make of Rybakina? And I think Rybakina Azarenka is quite an interesting matchup for me. And I'm quite torn as to who might win that one.
Yeah, I think it's certainly set up a tasty clash because you've almost got Azarenka, who's one of the best returners and counterpunchers in the game, against a big hitter who doesn't have the option to defend, really. So it's kind of the perfect sort of opposites in game and in style. And one shows a lot of emotion, one shows a lot of grit, the other one is almost quite serene and obviously didn't celebrate winning Wimbledon. She just very calmly walked towards the net. So opposites tend to make for very entertaining matches. And it was pretty entertaining, I'd say, this of the semi-final, of the quarterfinals. I did particularly enjoy because Ostapenko was competing at a high level. This one was a high level from both, and it was won, not lost, from an unforced error's perspective, which I did enjoy. And I think Ostapenko could be very pleased with this.
I enjoyed that match point save when I think Rybakina hit a really hard first serve and Ostapenko just hit what looks like a really easy double-handed backhand down the line. It was just fantastic.
It's amazing. She just, every single point, it is just like, it's factory reset when she's playing well, and it doesn't seem to matter what's going on there. But I was pleased that Rybakina got through this one because, as you talked about, the whole Wimbledon no point situation, it does make a bit of a mockery of the ranking systems, and it's a bit of a difficult year for her.
It's interesting, the semi-finalists, we've got a Russian obviously playing for Kazakhstan in Rybakina, and two Belarusians. I know if Wimbledon, the Belarusians weren't present at last year's event, but it's hard to keep these players away, and they're showing at the Australian Open, they, you know, whether you like it or not, they're still a force to be reckoned with.
Well, exactly. I bet a lot of people aren't very happy about three of the four, you know, the nationalities. But that's, you know, that's not at all anything to, you know, it's not their fault. We can't, you know, they're entitled to play. So, but I'm sure some people are up in arms about it. But, you know, we've got our semi-final lineups for the men and the women. Where am I going with this, guys? I clearly need to get off to go to the cinema.
You're just
as
too
well,
excited to give your own predictions.
I can't speak. I'm just so excited to predict.
Yeah, Kim, I've got 3 minutes, please. We've got to make it quick.
The credits are starting, yeah.
Chris has got to get to the cinema.
We don't want you going in late, tripping over in the dark and your popcorn flying everywhere.
Actually, I kind snacks. Of do. Can we just draw this out much longer, please?
I won't know what's going on anyway, so why not?
Right, so I'm going to ask each of you what we think is going to happen in the women's semi-finals and what final we're going to get come Saturday. Joel, kick us off.
Azarenka in two, Sabalenka in two.
Oh, so an all Belarusian final. Chris, do you agree?
I think Rybakina in two, and I'm going to go Sabalenka
in two.
Three.
Back to the net, getting a set. Yeah, I'm going to go I'm going to go Sabalenka in two, but I think it will be, I don't think it'll be a whitewash. And Rybakina in three. Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. That's very, very tough.
That's
to do.
Cool.
And the men's semifinals, I'm feeling a lot more confident about. Djokovic sits pass for me. What about you, Chris?
That's actually what we all predicted at the start of the tournament. And we did ask on Twitter about this one. And 64% of people believe that it will be Djokovic will win the title. And Tsitsipas had 29%. And then with a combined 6% was Tommy Paul and Khachanov. So I think it's pretty clear who Tennis Weekly listeners think it.
So, Kim, how many sets? How many sets Djokovic, Paul, Tsitsipas, Khachanov?
Three for Djokovic.
Straight sets, yes.
Four for Tsitsipas,
I'd agree.
I'm going to go Djokovic in four. And I'm going to say Khachanov in five.
Wow.
He's lost the plot.
I've lost the plot. And I'm just saying that to make things interesting. But I know it feels like the writing is on the wall for a Djokovic Tsitsipas Roland Garros reunion down under. But I'm going to suggest maybe shake things up. I think Khachanov just is very underappreciated in my book. So I think he maybe could spring a surprise.
Well, you're the 3%, Joel. 3% of people thought Khachanov, so that just about makes sense.
I thought more than 64% would pick Djokovic for the title, so I'm quite intrigued by that. But let's just have a quick look at what else is going on. No Brits feature in the doubles, unfortunately. The men's doubles semis are happening tomorrow. But the likes of Joe Salisbury and Neil Skupski they've fallen by the wayside. So not looking great on that front. However, Alfie Hewitt is in the wheelchair singles semi-final and Alfie Hewitt and Gordon Reid are in the wheelchair doubles semi-final. So we hope that they will bring home some titles for Great Britain. Just on the other results, collector set. All of the six players that we picked for this edition of Collector Set, with the help of one of our lovely listeners as well, they're all out. So we do have kind of results. We have four players on two correct picks. So there will be a tiebreaker question coming your way over the next couple of days. So that is one of those players is me. But we've also got Laura Busby, James Edwards, and at Sears 54321 or 53421, I should say, on social media. So we have a tie of four. Just keep your eyes peeled because we'll be coming and asking you a very important tiebreak question to settle that. James and Laura, you were one of only three people to get Gorda correct. So well done. And Sears, only one of two people to get Pegula correct. So yeah. Well done, everyone, for taking part.
And well done, Kim. We have to say it, Joel. Well done, Kim.
Begrudgingly, yes.
I'm very
well done.
For you.
Yeah, me and Chris are on zero. And I've heard from the Kim household that there have been some booby prizes being made or concocted for myself and Chris, given our such low scoring, well, zero scoring. Results for Collector
Zero
Set.
Between us.
Yeah, well, one of our lovely listeners, aka my dad, Mike McKenzie, big shout out, had some spare wooden spoons going handy. So he's written our names on and added some glitter. So at least we're like sparkly. And so we do actually genuinely each have our own dedicated wooden spoon now. But I think I'm going to retire mine for now because I actually didn't do too badly. I'm going to make sure each of you get your spoons.
And listeners, we're going to be putting those up at some point, no doubt, on our social media. So if you want to have a look at the fabled Tennis Weekly wooden spoons.
The spoons of shame.
The spoons of shame. Exactly. But listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the semi-finals and finals action to come from Melbourne.
We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can also follow us on social media or email the show. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @Tennis Weekly Pod. You can email us on tennisweeklypod@gmail.com or check out our website, www.tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back on Friday at Tennis Weekly HQ for our semi-finals catch-up. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.